It's the Brew Ha Ha Podcast with Steve Jackson and Mark Carpenter.
Well, it's Thursday, and I see cans and see bottles in front of me.
What would
so
you
that
like?
Must mean it's time for Brew Ha Ha. We have Mark and Herlinda with us.
And there's some great beer in those bottles and cans today.
I would imagine so.
Anderson Valley, we've got some great stuff here. Val Allen's here, and he brought it along.
Thank you.
Yum.
And I'm drinking right now one of the Brut IPAs. Quite tasty. Hmm.
We also have some Boonville Gold and a little bit of Thribble Current from our Sour Barrel-Aged Beer Program.
All right.
And one of my favorites, the Frambois Rosé Gosa. Am I saying that right? It's Gosa, right?
Gosa. Yeah. It's German. It's like Porsche.
Gosa.
Gosa. Porsche.
I have to say that I am intrigued by the name on one of those bottles, Thribble Current.
Yeah. Would you like to try some?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And that's
I would like you to tell us about
Bootling,
it, too.
Bootling, right? That's from the Bootling?
Yeah,
actually, I should introduce these folks, right?
Yeah, you should, yeah.
Okay.
So the
sexy voice we hear over to the left, because I always get messages after the show. What does he look like? I like his voice.
He's got three eyes.
Fal Allen, who's the head brewer over at Anderson Valley Brewing Company up in Boonville. That's why there's a Bootling. And then to my right is Don Winkle. He is a local craft beer and wine attorney, as well as other things, but he's definitely an expert on alcohol law.
Hello. I prefer the term cold beer attorney.
Cold beer attorney.
Cold beer attorney.
Starting a new branch of the legal practice here.
That's right.
Of course, Mark Carpenter across from me. Who was at Anchor Brewing Company since 1971, just retired a couple years ago.
And enjoying life. And I have to come here every Thursday so I can still get some beers and variety in my beer.
And share your knowledge of the industry with us.
Yes.
You know, Mark, you can go to Beercraft down the highway here. We were there right before we came here, and man, they got some good beer.
I should get out more than I do, but I really am pretty bad about getting out and about. And that's the one thing I like about coming on this show is I'm in touch with all these beers I'd never get otherwise.
You know? And you learned a new term, dong beer.
Dong beer,
dong
yes.
bar, sorry, dong, dong bar.
Dong bar.
Yeah.
You better explain
draft,
that one.
Draft only, no growlers.
This is what happens when you retire. You got to stay in touch here to make sure that you're still out there and about and, you know, not losing touch with the industry. Well, tell us a little bit about some of the ones that we're going to be talking about. We're going to take a quick break at the top of the hour, but we've got a couple of minutes. So tell us a little bit about some of the different varieties that we're going to be discussing in the next half hour.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit about our Brut IPA, which is brand new to our brewery. We also have the Boonville Gold, which is our super light, easy drinking beer. And then we wanted to go completely in the other direction, so we brought the Thribble Current, which you're interested in, and that is our triple wort fermented with a house mixed culture from our property, and then soured, and we add black currants to it. It takes about a year and a half to make. 100% barrel fermented. It's a unique beer.
Interesting. Now, is that a in wide release, or is that just a very small amount brewed each year?
No, we have it for year round. Once we've made it, we have it, and we continue to make it. It takes about a year and a half, as I said. So, we're continually making it and packaging it. But it's a beer that is not for everybody. If you don't like sour beer or you don't like big strong beers, then it's maybe not for you. Maybe one of the other ones, the Boonville Gold or the Goza, is more appropriate. But it depends on what you like. That's why we make a variety of beers. Something for everybody.
That's that way with food and with wine and with beer and with just about everything. It's like different tastes or whatever. And that's one of the impressive things that I've noticed. I mean, not just on my own, but primarily having a chance to come in and talk with, you know, like Mark and Herlinda and the guests they bring in, is the amazing variety of breweries and the amazing varieties of products that those breweries turn out. It's absolutely incredible.
Well, there's over 7,000 breweries in America now. And, you know, one of the reasons Don is able to do what he's doing is that there are enough customers out there. It used to be when we had, you know, 500 or 1,000 breweries, there just weren't enough breweries to do something like that. But I think it's great that we have a legal expert that can talk about our liquor laws, which are not simple. If you've ever read the Code of Federal Regulations 1 through 199, you know.
No, but I'll remember that the next time I have insomnia. Right. This is Pete Fopiano. I am sitting in for Steve Jackson, and I am here with my guests on our weekly segment of Brouhaha. One of the things that we started talking about during the break, and we thought, well, why keep it to ourselves? Let's pass it along to our listeners, is some of the trends and some of the legalities that breweries face. And, you know, when you buy a bottle of beer or a can of beer in the supermarket, there's a lot that goes into getting that onto supermarket. So I thought I'd toss it off. Herlinda, why don't you kick it off and talk about some of the stuff that's trending, if you will,
some
in the
of the
market.
Things that are bothering me these days. So one of the reasons why I asked Don, I went to one of his rooftop parties, and I was like, you're the person to have on about this. So I get asked to help with getting beer for charity events and nonprofits all the time. And things, I've watched things change over the last, 20 years of where it was really easy just to hand it to them. And now there's like all this paperwork, ABC law, 501c3 and all these different things. And that nonprofits need to be aware of when you're doing it, or anyone, if you're doing an event, if you're doing a fundraiser, if you're selling beer at an event that's not your own, but also even if it is. And I had to argue with somebody one day when they said, well, no wineries asked me for this paperwork. I'm like, it's the law. You have to fill out this paperwork. So I thought Don could enlighten us on these different things. So, because we're going into the summer, nonprofits are doing festivals, they're doing fundraisers. Sometimes they're selling beer, sometimes they're selling tickets. It's different if there's food. You have to have security, all these different kinds of things. Can you tell us a little bit?
Essentially, you think about the nonprofit as a vendor in this context. And so a beer or wine manufacturer is only allowed to transfer beer or wine to someone who actually has a license to do something with it. And that would be a retailer or a wholesaler. So essentially, a nonprofit has to become, if they're going to do an event and they're going to pour beer or wine at it, and it's a public event, whether it's a fundraiser or not, they actually have to get a one-day event license, and they become a retail licensee for that day. So that allows the wine or beer manufacturer to donate beer, and then that nonprofit can go ahead and serve that beer, and they can charge for it, and they can do tickets, they can do, charge by the glass. It's because essentially they are a licensee for that day.
So if a place, so say they're serving it, say like at a golf course that already has a liquor license.
Golf courses have liquor licenses?
Yeah.
19th hole, man.
The ones I've worked at. they had to actually give up their license for the day.
Yes.
Or any like a restaurant or somewhere, if somebody's bringing in beer that's not sold there already, or I'm not sure how that works, but they have to transfer their license. They have to surrender it for the day, right?
That
or
is
for the
correct.
Weekend, if it's a weekend event.
That is correct. And then this is under the concept of you can't have more than one licensee operating under the same premises. So that's really the key factor here, is that only one licensee gets to be there. It's either going to be the nonprofit under their one-day special event license, or it's going to be the golf course. And so there's a relatively simple process for dealing with it, but it's essentially the retailer just fills out a form and surrenders their license for the time period that the event is going to occur, and then it just automatically comes back the next day. You don't have to go reapply or try other forms or anything like that. It's a relatively painless process, but the whole idea that the way it sounds, I have to surrender my license, that's a little unnerving to some people.
Right.
But that's essentially the thing.
Right. And then if like the veterans halls are doing an event, everybody has to, you have to get your like 1 or 2 day event license, and also insurance for those days as well. The nonprofit needs to make sure that they're covered with that. They've got the insurance is going to make sure that they show that they have the ABC permission, because you have to take that paperwork and you have to get that signed and approved, right, for each event.
That's right. And when you're applying for the 1 day event license, you essentially have to get permission from law enforcement. And the ABC can put on additional conditions, like you have to have security or maybe put up some type of barrier in between a playground or something to that effect. And those are common, that they put those in place. And then one of the things that comes up frequently, with, especially when nonprofits are going to just, you know, rent a banquet room in a hotel, the hotel is not willing to give up its license for that day. And so in that case, you know, you cannot donate. So essentially, the beer that's being sold at that event is under the hotel's license, and a manufacturer of beer or wine cannot donate to that event and have that beer sold at that event, because that essentially would be a retailer selling donated beer, and it doesn't work.
So what do they do instead?
They can't do that. They're just going to have to sell beer under the hotel's license. Mm-hmm.
Could the hotel then donate the profits from that beer to the – so sometimes that's easier.
Yeah, exactly. And there could be other reasons, like the hotel just physically, because of the way their license is set up, they can't just surrender one piece of their license and keep their bar open at the same time. It just won't work.
But, but a brewery or winery couldn't donate to that 501c3. So as a brewery or a winery, you need to see the 501c3, and what else?
I think the best practices is to look on the Secretary of State's website, double check the status of the nonprofit. It's a little bit belt and suspenders, because the ABC does that when they issue the 1-day event license. So what I tell people, especially with beer festivals and such, is do not unload the beer off the truck until you've seen that beer, that 1-day event license, and the dates match up, time, places all match up. And that's really what you need.
And that's just protecting everybody anyway from it's lawsuits, et cetera, right?
Well, it's not really a lawsuit situation. It's keeping your license, you know, and keeping the ABC happy, which means you keep your license.
And then taxes, I'm sure, have something to do in here somewhere, with beer being sold or alcohol being sold.
The manufacturer still has to keep track of where its beer went, and they have to pay the appropriate taxes on that when it goes into its dispensable units, just like they were selling it to a wholesaler.
So can the brewery or winery sell to, like, say, the hotel, that somebody that doesn't want to surrender their license, they can sell it to them at a discount? And
no.
Then – no, okay.
No, that's a retail license, and you have to play by all the retail rules.
Okay. Yeah. It's gotten a lot more complicated just in the few years I've been doing, you know, events.
Like, well, I'm sure there's just more and more charities that want to have free beer, and they just have to understand that they have to jump through these hoops.
Yeah. And it's a matter of getting caught. I mean, you know, there's been a lot of times that people have been putting on an event for years. They've never done it before. And or, you know, they've never done the licenses before because they just never got caught. And the ABC has increased their presence in these situations in the last couple of years because of the increased pressure on beer and wine manufacturers to participate. So there's been a few warning letters gone out to people on these things.
And these are all California state rules. We're not talking
about California.
Yeah, so if you're a charity, you should hold your events at federal facilities. Because all laws are
the DMV.
Are
off. The DMV.
All rules are off. Just find a federal facility.
You take a boat and go out past the international waters.
I'm all for beer at the DMV in line. Okay, so where do they go online, speaking of? Is there like an ABC site, or is it a city site? Where do they go to start this
process? You can actually go on the ABC's site, which is actually pretty good. But I tell you, if the first time you want to put on an event and you want to get an event license, I recommend you go in the ABC field office. You stand at the counter at downtown Santa Rosa.
Yeah, and that ABC stands for Alcohol and Beverage Control.
And you strike up a conversation with the nice people there, and they will help you get your 1-day event license.
Yeah,
they're actually quite easy to work with there.
I imagine with all the wineries and now all the breweries here, they probably have a pretty complete office here.
They do. You know, and some regional offices are better than others. I've dealt with several at this point, and we have a very good one.
Yeah, and be nice to them. I'm all for, like, you go in and just be nice. Ask questions, take your notes, you know, like any information they tell you to look at, you know, like do it because you'll just make things easier. And no oops the day of, you know, where so, I mean, I've heard of festivals that weren't actually able to like serve that day unless until they went and got an emergency, you know, license.
And that's when you want a special relationship with those guys. Yeah. And then a couple of years ago, before people really started paying attention to this, I know I went to a couple of events that were not licensed correctly. And they were beer festivals as opposed to, you know, some nonprofit having a fundraiser. These were beer festivals with lots of breweries pouring. And, of course, none here. But they were you know, I just knew it wasn't licensed right.
Yeah, yeah. I think there's a lot of that goes on until someone gets caught.
And there was no bad intentions.
Right. Correct.
Yeah.
Right.
That doesn't keep you from getting your license suspended, though.
It does not.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
And, you know, like you said, the sheriff's office can put a lot of demands on it, too. For example, the Boonville Beer Festival, we have to hire 12 additional officers or something like that. And we got to pay for that.
There's good reason for that, though. That
hey, festival, no arrest this year.
That festival is quite something. Everyone should go.
It's a big one.
Have you been to that, Mark, to the Boonville?
Believe it or not, I haven't. But I worked with so many people at Anchor that would go that I think half the breweries showed up there.
Well, you're going to have to go next year.
Yeah.
85 breweries.
There you go.
That's a lot of beer to try.
Yeah, it's like one of the best beer festivals I've ever been to.
In one of the most beautiful towns in California.
Yep.
Speaking of, that beer that we're drinking right now, I'm drinking right now, the Thribble Current. Thribble has to be a Bootling language. Am I right?
Yeah. It's a Bootling word. And for those who don't know, Anderson Valley, the Anderson Valley is pretty remote. And in the 1880s, 1890s, they developed their own language. And it's one of three recognized lingos in America, Hawaiian Pidgin English and Cajun being the other two.
Ah.
And Thribble means three times. Three times as good. And so it's made with our triple wort, our Belgian triple wort, and so we called it Thribble. And not too
that's
tricky,
great.
But, you know. Thank
that's
you, thank you.
I like
it's
that.
An unusual beer.
I've always liked that the idea of that language. I think it's really cool.
Yeah.
I guess because it was a real crossroads in the early days, huh? And so it was a way for you locals to speak to each other without the foreigners knowing what you're talking about.
Yeah, you know, supposedly it was a language developed because a woman came up from the city. Her family had sent her up there because she was with child but without the benefit of a husband. And
I don't see a benefit, but that's okay. Sorry.
And so they wanted to be able to, you know, talk about her without her, without making her
yes.
feel bad. So they developed their language to kind of say things, you know, about her in front of her. I don't know if that's true. I wasn't there. I am old, but not that old.
Yeah, it's a great story. If you don't mind, I'm drinking the Brut IPA, which is just delicious.
Well, thank you.
And people who listen to the show know that I love Brut IPAs. We had Kim on, who's the inventor of it. And this is a great rendition. And so could you tell us about it? What, for instance, the hops and the whole thing?
Well, you know, I was very, very lucky. I was down in San Francisco, had a Brut IPA made by Magnolia, Dick Cantwell. And he eventually introduced me to Kim, and Kim told me what he did, and Dick told me what he did. And I you know, I wanted to make one, but I wasn't fully on board yet. And I went to Hawaii to the Hilo Beer Fest. I grew up in Hilo in a year, and there was this beer there from Lanikai Brewing. And I appeared at the booth thinking, man, this is one of the best beers I've ever had. And I had a bunch of them, I'll be honest, a few. And at the end of the night, all the partials went back to my friend Bob's house, and the brewers came over and drank beer. And Steve, the guy from Lanikai Brewing, the brewer, showed up. And he was super nice. He's, you know, we talked about it. Somebody said, well, let me send you all the information I got researching this. I talked to, you know, a bunch of different people, and I talked about this enzyme that they use to help make the beer drier. And he sent all that to me. And so I had a real head start making this beer. I didn't have to do a lot of experimentation. And I think the great thing about this style is its dryness. It's you use an enzyme in it that breaks down a lot of the more complicated sugars to simple sugars so the yeast have access to them. They eat them and leave very little residual sugar. So it's very dry, very sessionable or quaffable, and it's less filling, you know. and then it has this beautiful hop profile, and that's kind of – that dryness allows you to feature the hops in a way that other beers don't. So I think it's really what every IPA, you know, wants to be, but some just can't make it there. That super dry, very accessible, drinkable alcohol is, you know, it's about 7%, but not ridiculous, not like 9%. And this great floral character from the hops.
It's my understanding that most of these guys are doing late edition hopping more than boil hopping. Is that your case also?
Geek alert. Yeah. Let's tell people what that is.
Yeah, this
we've got
whole,
people
this
stuck in traffic in the rain right now that aren't necessarily in the, you know, in the beer world and wishing they were right here with us right now.
Yeah, they should look for brewed IPAs out there. Ours is a lot of late edition hops. And, you know, hops are a flower, and so they have bitterness on the one hand, and brewers use them to get bitterness to balance the sweetness. And they're also very floral. They're a flower, and they have all these incredible floral aromas that you can get from them. And they can, you know, range from tropical, mango, pineapple, all the way down to piney and citrusy. So there's a lot of different flavors you can get out of them.
And if you add hops at the beginning, you're going to get all the bitterness, but the floral is going to go away. It's going
Correct.
To go up your smokestack.
Yeah.
And so the idea of late edition hops is they don't boil very long, if at all. And so you're dissolving the volatile oils and getting them in the beer, but not the bitterness. And Fowl's done a great job with this one. It's a,
well, thank
it's a
you.
Nice beer.
Just the last few minutes of our weekly segment of Brouhaha. And a couple of interesting topics have arisen about some of the business aspect of the breweries today. Or Linda, you want to kind of kick that off?
Well, there's some the huge news that came out, you know, last week in the beer world were Boston Beer Company that most people know, you know, Sam Adams Beer, and Dogfish Head Brewery, which has another one of those handsome, you know, brewer guys, Sam Calzone, and they've been around for a long time as well. They announced a very surprising merger, and I've been reading like different articles that were saying it was a merger, and then you know, and then other ones were like, you know, Sam Calzone made the best exit strategy, but it doesn't sound like he's not leaving. It's like stock. But what's I figured with Don being a lawyer, he would know the difference between, you know, the merger, the buyout, and what happened kind of in this as far as legal business.
Well, you know, the deal points that happened in this transaction are only known to the principals that were involved. But, you know, in general, it's the difference between a merger and a buyout, it's a bit of a tomato-tomato situation. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, typically, though, in a buyout, there is just a flat-out, they buy all the equipment, all the assets, all the marks and stuff and move forward. In a merger, there's typically some type of retention of one company. But the bottom line is a merger has two companies, a disappearing corporation and a surviving corporation. The disappearing corporation is merged into and with the surviving corporation. So if you want to continue to use the marks and stuff of the disappearing corporation, you can do it under the surviving corporation's name, or you can form a subsidiary and do it that way. Now, one of the other differences in a merger is that a merger typically has some blending of the company. And in the Dogfish Boston Brewing Company transaction, there was a stock transferred as opposed to cash. And so the principals from Dogfish are still involved. They got stock in Boston Brewing Company. And there's at least one board position that also went to someone from that company as well. So they're going to continue to have involvement and and we'll see where that goes. You know, some mergers have worked out well for people, some not so much.
It looks like a win-win, and Sal actually is good friends with Sam Calzone from Dogfish Head, right?
Yeah, Sam and I are friends, and I know the Samuel Adams guys a little bit. Jim Cook's I've interviewed him and talked to him a few times, and I think it's a great merger that the Dogfish Head brings some vitality to the situation that Samuel Adams was a little bit, you know, lacking in. They're an older brand, and they're having a little bit of trouble being hip, and the Dogfish guys are definitely super hip and got no trouble there. And the Samuel Adams guys bring to the table a whole bunch of distribution that I think Dogfish Head was struggling a little bit with. I think every brewery in America is now with 7,000 breweries. So I think it's a brilliant merger that you're going to get two stronger companies out of it.
I agree.
So Boston Brewing Company has a couple of companies that people may not know that they own. They own Angry Orchard Cider, which is super popular, like all over. It's, you know, definitely a commercial cider. And then they also have Twisted Tea. Yeah. So that's like a – is that the alcohol seltzer or the alcohol kombucha?
Yeah.
And
I'm sure they're going to make other things like the alcohol water or whatever you're calling them. Alcohol seltzers are really an up-and-coming category.
Yeah.
You'll see a lot more of that.
There's a lot more, yeah. But then, Mark, you've been around this business – since 1971.
Yeah, I should stay out of this one. I'm not a fan of Jim Cook. Jim Cook in the early days did all the best he could to put a lot of brewers out of business.
And yeah, I think Anchor and Boston Brewing Company were probably kind of head to head for a while there, right?
Well, not really, but Jim just was not he was not promoting small brewers the way he sometimes likes to pretend.
Yeah. So it's all going to be very interesting, I think, as all the way around, craft beer sales are getting hit a bit, except for probably Russian River Brewery that I know that Donna helps out a lot.
even Russian River, I think, is going to have to really work hard to get their beer out to market. I mean, when we had 2,000 breweries, it wasn't as hard. And now with 7,000 breweries in America.
It's unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah. Shelf space is really at a premium.
And how many?
Quite a few breweries, I mean, even, you know, nationwide. And I'm sorry to cut this short, but we have to end early today. Mark, Gerlinda, Don, well, thank you for coming in and enlightening
us.
It's been a pleasure. And it has been a pleasure for me to sit in and guest host for Steve.